A wheel of Parmigiano Reggiano at 24 months carries roughly 6 times the concentration of free glutamate of the fresh milk it began as. The cheese is not a flavored version of milk, it is a different substance, and your tongue knows it before your mind catches up. Fresh food has flavor, cooked food has depth, fermented food has something else, a quality I find easiest to call presence, though the word is unscientific. And it turns out the difference between flavor and presence is one of the cleanest biochemistry stories in all of cooking. The mechanism is straightforward in its outline and bewildering in its detail. Fermentation, in the broad culinary sense, is the controlled action of microbial enzymes on a food substrate. Bacteria, yeasts, and molds secrete proteases, enzymes that cleave large protein molecules into smaller peptides and finally into individual amino acids. The amino acids suddenly unbound, register on the tongue in a way the parent protein never could. Free glutamate, the most studied of these, binds to the umami receptors on the taste papillae and produces the savory weight that defines miso, soy sauce, aged cheeses, fish sauce, and slow-cooked broth. In an unfermented substrate, the glutamate is locked inside intact protein chains. The tongue cannot taste it. In a fermented substrate, the same glutamate has been liberated by microbial work. Concentrations rise by a factor of 5 to 10 over the course of months. The food was always there, the flavor was not. The microbes did not add anything. They unlocked what was already present. Free amino acids are only the first layer. The microbes also generate as byproducts of their metabolism entirely new aromatic compounds that did not exist in the raw input. Esters, small fragrant molecules formed when acids meet alcohols, produce the fruity high notes in aged sake and in well-made wine. Lactones, ring-shaped lipid derivatives, supply the coconut and peach notes in long-aged dairy. Sulfur-containing volatiles, formed from the breakdown of sulfur-bearing amino acids like methionine and cysteine, are responsible for the deep, meaty undertone in long-aged soy sauce and miso, and for the funkier corners of well-made fish sauce. None of these compounds exist in fresh milk, fresh soybeans, or fresh anchovies. They are products of biological time. The Italian food chemist Saverio Menino and his collaborators in Parma have spent years cataloging the volatile compounds in long-aged cheeses, and the published lists run to several hundred molecules per sample. A glass of fresh milk, by contrast, harries perhaps 24. The cultural geography of this is wider than people sometimes notice. Parmigiano Reggiano, miso, fish sauce, soy sauce, kimchi, sauerkraut, aged ham, vinegar, yogurt, sourdough, kombucha, surströmming, all carry the imprint of time and the work of invisible creatures. The wheel turns. The microbes do not add, they release. And what they release is the silent language of the slow and careful unfolding of flavor. Every food culture on Earth has independently invented the same trick, because the underlying biochemistry works regardless of substrate. The Italians ferment milk for 2 years and call the result Parmigiano. The Japanese ferment soybeans for 1 to 3 years and call it miso. The Vietnamese ferment anchovies in salt for 12 months and call it Nuoc Mam. The English fermented anchovies in much the same way and called it Worcestershire sauce. The Roman Empire ferments anchovies in salt and called it garum. The technique is the same. The free amino acid content of all four products lands in roughly the same numerical range. A blindfolded chef can taste them as variations on a single theme, because they are variations on a single theme. Protein converted, over time, into language the tongue can read directly. There is a thought experiment I sometimes use with cooks who are skeptical about this, and it requires no laboratory. Hold a slice of fresh tomato in your mouth, and then hold a sliver of sun-dried tomato in your mouth, and pay attention to where on the palate each one registers and how long it stays. The fresh tomato is bright, acidic, watery. It announces itself on the front of the tongue and leaves quickly. The sun-dried tomato, which is, in the loosest sense, a mildly fermented tomato, since the slow dehydration permits limited enzymatic and microbial activity before the moisture drops too low to support it, sits further back, lasts much longer, and reads as a denser version of the same fruit. It is not tomato concentrated. It is tomato with its proteins and sugars partially deconstructed into the units the tongue understands faster. The same tomato has changed languages. The reason fermented food triggers a stronger flavor recognition than its unfermented parent is, I think, also worth being honest about. The human palate evolved across hundreds of thousands of years in which calorically dense, biochemically complex foods were rare and valuable. A ripe fruit, an aged carcass, a piece of milk solid that is soured into something firmer and longer lasting these were the foods that pulled hominids through lean seasons. The aroma signatures of microbial transformation appear to function as a kind of evolutionary bookmark, marking these foods as nutritionally and metabolically worth pursuing. This is part of why infants reject sour and bitter compounds and adults learn to crave them. The brain rewires itself to recognize fermented presence as value. The way it rewires itself to recognize the smell of wood smoke or roasting fat. We are built to find this food. What strikes me most as someone who works in a kitchen is how recently we abandoned this. 100 years ago, in any culture you care to name, every functional household kitchen contained at least one active ferment. A crock of pickling cabbage in a German cellar. A jar of Nukazuke rice bran in a Tokyo pantry. A bowl of starter on a French farmhouse counter. A clay pot of fish sauce in a Vietnamese kitchen. The ferment was infrastructure. Daily low effort. Taken for granted. Now it is a hobby. The shift maps almost perfectly onto the rise of industrial refrigeration and shelf-stable processing in the mid-20th century. Technologies that solved the preservation problem fermentation had solved for 10,000 years and made the daily ferment redundant. We solved the engineering problem and lost the flavor with it. The food still tastes alive when you bring the ferment back. That has not changed, and it cannot, because the biochemistry has not changed. The proteins are still convertible, the volatiles are still latent, the tongue is still listening. The only question is whether the kitchen is still doing the work, or whether the work has been outsourced to a factory whose interest in the answer ends at shelf stability.